The views expressed on this show by guests and the hosts on issues outside of the 9/11 controlled demolition evidence are the opinions of those individuals alone and do not necessarily reflect those of architects and engineers for 9/11 truth.
Welcome to 9/11 Freefall. I'm the host, Andy Steele. Today we're joined by Cheryl Curtis. Cheryl is an all-star activist in the 9/11 Truth Movement, taking part in its important outreach efforts. She's been on the show before to talk about at least one of them, and she's also the host of 9/11 Wake Up Call. And if you don't follow her yet, then you need to find the show and start listening. And she's been doing it for a number of years, just like myself. She's an ally here. And this important struggle. Cheryl, welcome back to 9/11 Freefall.
Oh, Andy, great to be here. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So, again, we always pick up new people. There's people waking up to 9/11 truth and all sorts of other truths all the time here who are new. So please tell our audience more about the show that you've been doing all these years.
Okay. Yeah, I did a conference on 9/11 in 2007, and Richard Gage came, and people, you know, the usual people in the 9/11 Truth Movement from around the country. And due to that, the radio station, the local alternative radio station, asked me to do a program, a radio show, and it was at the University of Hartford. I've been there since 2008, started in February of 2008, so I've been there 12 years now doing it, and I cover mostly 9/11 issues, but over time, I've broadened that, and I cover, you know, the Oklahoma City bombing, the assassinations we lived through in the 60s, which, you know, all seem like they aren't what we've been told. So the evidence is totally opposite of what we've been told on that, so there's a lot of censorship on all of those issues. And then, of course, 9/11 is a big censored item. And so that's basically it. I did a few panels at the Left Forum with Kat from New York City. We did a few panels several years in a row on the Deep State and involved 9/11, and we got censored there. And I'm also part of the Connecticut 9/11 Truth group here. And so that's sort of where I'm at with everything.
So if you don't live in Connecticut, but people want to listen to your show, how do we find it?
They can go to the station website, which is www.wwuh.org. So there's five W's, uh.org.
All right, five W's. That's a lot of W's, but a whole lot of truth. So I think we'll provide a link, too, here in the show description, just to save some people some typing here. So what really thrust you into 9/11, though, at the very start? Like, what really just made you say, oh, my God, this is something real, and I need to be at the forefront of it?
Yeah, in 2002, a friend of mine kept telling me that we'd been lied to about 9/11, and I didn't believe him. You know, I thought he was crazy. and then he gave me a book to read, and I looked at that, and I said, wow, there is something to this. And then I learned about there was a 9/11 conference in 2004 in Toronto. So I went to that, and then I was, like, really hooked. I said, wow, this is really, you know, we really have been lied to, and there's something to this. And from then on, I just started reading all the books that came out and doing the research, and then I got involved in putting on the conference in 2007, and that led to the radio program. And I did start out in the anti-war movement, and I found it very, it still is to me, sad that many people in the anti-war movement will not get on board with 9/11. They won't even look at the evidence, and they can even be mocking. And they're just, I don't know how you can be anti-war and not want to look at what caused the wars in the first place and think you can end the wars by not exposing that. I don't get that, but anyway.
Well, some things are more acceptable. That's why every kind of activist you see in some fictional movie, they're involved in bringing water to villagers or feeding children or bringing them medicine or something like that. These safe issues, anti-war, now there was a divide back in 2003 over that, but it was a more safe issue than questioning the foundation under which this post-9/11 world is built. And of course, the science of the destruction of these towers is so clear and in your face when you actually look at it, but so many people have refused to look at it. And hence why this movement exists. And I think we're making headway, and we'll get into some of that later. But let's talk about what's going on with 9/11 Truth and really the overall big picture of all alternative news regarding censorship of information that may question official narratives. And before I ask more specific questions, Cheryl, I just want your general take on what you see happening out there.
In the 9/11 Truth movement or people reacting to it?
Just overall with 9/11 information, and most of it now will be mainstream news coming up instead of stuff that used to come up before more readily. You have to search deeper and harder to find it. Of course, what's going on with purging of certain information, not even just related to 9/11, but also other things. I mean, this has been going on for a while.
Yeah, I think the censorship has really increased over the last 10 years, and I think it's totally amazing to me where we're at, but I would say that most things that the mainstream media tells us are false. I know Peter Phillips in his book, The Global Elite, talks about how 80% of the news comes from three PR companies that, you know, package it up and give it to them. So they're all on the same, same point on message, and it's all basically propaganda. And then what they're doing, as you said, where you want to do a search for something. So now if someone is curious about 9/11 and wants to learn, unless they know somebody who can tell them what sites to go to, they can't really find it if they do a search, unless they maybe, I don't know, go through page 20 of the pages offered. And I'm not even sure if it comes up then. But, yeah, so that's very disturbing. And the other thing I noticed they're doing is, in addition to deleting videos that they say, you know, don't meet community guidelines or something stupid like that, is they put, I noticed when I go to Global Research, if I do a search for to get to globalresearch.ca, that website, the first thing that comes up is an article that criticizes Global Research and says that it's a conspiracy theory website, which it totally, it's just a great website with lots of different news and articles from people all around the world. So they do that kind of thing to discourage people from going there. So I think, yeah, now it's become, if you don't know somebody who can tell you where to go and what to look for, it's very hard as a newcomer to go out there and find it, which is probably their goal in censoring it. But, yeah, the censorship is massive, and it's not just on YouTube and those kinds of things, although it's huge there, but they censor speakers in events, you know, they censor books and, you know, even your local library. How many books do they carry on 9/11? And I've tried even donating some to my local libraries, and the smaller town libraries are more willing to accept them, but in the larger towns, they won't, I found. That's been my experience. So they won't even accept them if you try and donate them. So the censorship is rampant in all aspects, all ways they can do it, they're doing it. And I think even in, I see a lot of what I call leadership, group leadership censorship. So I see that in the anti-war movement. If the leader says, 9/11 is, you know, thinking 9/11 we've been lied to, they, you know, you're just a conspiracy theorist and, you know, kafooey, then everyone follows along and believes them rather than being their own free thinker. So that's kind of disturbing also. But I guess that's just human nature.
You know, what's interesting is that you think and you're kind of taught, I don't know necessarily in school, but just from what other people say and think as you're growing up, that the bigger something is, the less likely that something will be censored or kept a secret. But from what I've seen, the bigger something is, the more likely it'll be censored, the more likely something will be kept a secret. And it seems counterintuitive. But no, the smaller libraries, as you said, you know, are more likely to accept an alternative information book than something that's a major metropolitan library system. And it's just really strange. I guess the bigger the system, the bigger the control that we see taking place. And a lot of people just kind of go along. That's what most of us don't understand, is when you have employees who are working for whatever system, doesn't matter if it's a library, if it's for a government agency, most people at their jobs just go along and don't question things. don't think about it afterwards because they can always pass the buck higher up. And they always assume that somebody higher up has everything covered, has looked into everything, that whatever is being passed down the line is more justified. And it's not surprising that we're in the situation that we are in now. I can remember back when YouTube first got started, they used to have a more democratic system on their front page for putting the top-rated videos there. And it was really just based on most viewed, right? And so you'd see things like Loose Change, you'd see other 9/11 videos come up to the front page. And then I noticed that they changed most viewed to What's Hot, or something to that effect. Well, you know, What's Hot? Who determines that? Some executive at YouTube? And they started moving the most viewed category off the front page into another section until it just disappeared completely, because they didn't want the democratic nature of people's preferences and tastes and what they're most interested in to come to the forefront. They wanted to control what you saw.
The most viewed are probably the videos like 9/11 that, you know, expose the lies, etc. So they don't want that on the front page. And a really good example of that is kind of what you did. I don't know, what year were you doing it with C-SPAN? Oh, 2014, I guess. So prior to that, the program you did where you organized people to call into the Washington Journal on C-SPAN and ask all their guests about World Trade Center 7, and, you know, kind of catch them off guard. And so finally they agreed with you to have Richard Gage be on their program if we would, you know, stop bothering them. And so Richard Gage did go on. It's August 1st of 2014, and he's now the most viewed video in their history, and they started in 1979, and he's got over 1 million views for that video. Now, have they asked him to come on again, knowing that the public would like this? You know, and so I'm assuming they haven't. He's not, you know. But anyway, he's got the most viewed video. He's got over 1 million. He's the only program that has over 1 million views. So, that's pretty good.
Yeah, beating out, I just want to say, on anything, not just Washington Journal, beating out Trump and Obama and all of that. There's Richard Gage at the very top. I love it.
I know. I'm waiting for them to change how they categorize their shows so that you can't see that. But it's still up there now, which is great. Yeah. So that was a brilliant thing you did, Andy, and I think that shows how one person can really change things and make a difference. So hats off to you on that one. That's great.
Well, I just want to say, though, it wasn't just me. I mean, there was a lot of people, because the reason that we had to use the supporters list is because, you know, one person they can just write off as a kook from upstate New York, and they would block my number. So to this day, since I never changed my phone number, because everybody in the movement has it now, and if I changed it, it would cause chaos. But since I never changed my phone number since then, my number is still blocked from calling into that program. So it was a lot of people. And what was so amazing about it was that, you know, imagine you get a phone call from a complete stranger on the other side of the country that says, hey, you don't know me, but I'm with AE, 9/11 Truth, and can you do this thing for us tomorrow? Like call into national TV and, you know, read this question. And people all wanted to do it. The only people who said no were the people who had to work or something like that, but everybody joined in. It was almost like some kind of strange synchronistic moment where there's just a common understanding, a common cause, and the real success there is in the AE 9/11 Truth supporters, because that could have never happened without those people.
Without those people, yeah, and I know you had called me and Greg, and we did it one time, and I think you're right. I felt like, wow, this is a way to really get back at the system and kind of, you know, force them to deal with us and to cover these issues. So it was actually pretty exciting. I felt like a victory, you know, a victory for the little guy.
Well, I'm going to say this, too, is that I think this is, you know, just as one example where there was an opening, but I think that the greatest opportunities come from these openings. It's very difficult to go to institutions like the corporate news and whatnot and ask them to finally have a conscience and do their job and admit they've been complicit all of these years. But if you can find some kind of way to go around that system and you don't mind making a situation awkward, which on C-SPAN there were several awkward moments that were created on the show, And I find them kind of funny. Some people find that uncomfortable, but if you're willing to go through the awkward moment and possibly have everybody in the room despising you for the next 5 minutes by bringing this up, and you're polite and keep your cool and somehow get these opportunities to manifest in public, because the purpose, you know, when you target somebody, let's say a political official or a news person, you're not necessarily going to win them over. What you're doing it for is everybody around so they can see how the other side reacts to it. So that's what we have to do in the movement. Now, people have been focusing a lot of efforts on social media and YouTube and those kinds of things. 9/11 Truth doesn't seem to be the main focus of the censorship. Now, when I say that, I know that they are censoring it. But right now, their sights are on other things, like people who question the WHO's information on the current crisis, you know, those kinds of informational battles taking place. But do you think there might be a point at which they start equating 9/11 Truth in the same category and just start wiping it completely from YouTube, where we just can't find it at all?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, if they haven't done it by now, I don't, you know, there's so much out there. I don't know if they could even do it. I mean, I guess they could. You know, they have armies of people probably working for them. But I don't know. That's a good question. I have heard people refer to the coronavirus pandemic, supposedly, that we're in, as the new 9/11, so, or another 9/11. So they are making that comparison. And I think the more that the lawsuits that the architects and engineers and the lawyers committee are doing, the more, if they become more public or start to make headway, then I think they might try to do that and censor it more. But it's already pretty censored. So, I mean, you can find things. It's out there. But, you know, it is already pretty well censored. And even, you know, doing a conference on 9/11, it can be hard to even, like, find a location that will let you use their space to have it in once they know the topic. You know, we had that happen here. We did in 2007, we did the 9/11 conference. And the second year we went back to do another one, I called the same location, and they wouldn't even answer the call when they heard it was me. And then I finally got to talk to them, and I said, you know, I guess people had complained to them that they allowed us there, so they wouldn't allow us back. So the censorship is there in all different walks of life. And I don't know, I don't know if they could wipe us off totally off the Internet, because I think people have all this downloaded in their own computers, and when they take it down, they could just put it right back up again, right? And isn't there a point where if you censor too much, it's like then people want to know why that's happening and it draws more attention?
Well, yeah. I mean, even tyranny has to be realistic. I mean, the Romans knew that, so that's why they, when they conquered a certain place, they would try to give them certain goodies and, you know, so they could say, hey, we're better than what you were living under before, but it was still tyranny. But in this case, yeah, if you just go ahead and censor everything, then you're just going to look bad and people will start to fight back against it and realize there's a problem. I think for years they just tried to write us off as crazy people. That's why I think, even though this is going to sound totally off this planet to probably this audience, I think the fact that they are doing this in some ways is a good sign, because it shows how desperate they are. And then you compare some of the strife that's going on over other issues right now. I think that it's possibly, and I could be wrong, I fully acknowledge that, but I think it's possibly a window of opportunity that could be opening up for 9/11 Truth, because people are realizing just how corrupt these systems they relied on are right now. I don't know. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think you may be onto something there, that once people see that, you know, and I think the coronavirus, this whole thing is even more, it's more scary to people because it's affecting everybody individually, and where 9/11 didn't affect everybody and you could kind of go on with your life and not think about it. But this does really affect everybody, and I think people are kind of getting that it's kind of over the top a little bit, that to have us all in lockdown, and I mean the control issue there, and then all this information now that's coming out about how they're counting the data wrong, and you know, encouraging doctors through paying them more money if they label people having died of coronavirus than what they actually died of. So people are becoming more aware of that. And I think, yes, when they see that, then they might say, hey, if they lied to us about this, then what about 9/11? And I actually saw that when talking to someone who was struggling with our healthcare system when they had a major illness, and you know, they had to fight for every little, you know, reimbursement from the health insurance they had. And then when I started talking to them about 9/11, they kind of got it, because they were seeing how the system was failing them in their, a different aspect of their life. So, yeah, I think that does open people up to it. So it could be really a good thing for 9/11.
One of the arguments that they'll say is that YouTube is a private company. They have the right to censor whoever they want. It's their private property, which, I mean, on a legal level, I guess they are right. It doesn't make it any better or any less slimy. But they do have a point there in terms of challenging them on free speech. So the best thing to do is walk off of that reservation and start something else. The problem is that there doesn't seem to be the kind of momentum around other platforms like there has been around YouTube. It's the most widely known thing. I mean, people will even refer to a video off of another site as a YouTube. That's when you know you've conquered a market as a business. But have you seen people using other platforms, and have you seen any with any real success and momentum behind them?
You know, there are a few others, but no, I don't. I agree with what you say. I think people have it in their. It's just like when you want to do a search, people say, they don't say search, they say Google, right? And the same with YouTube. So I know there are other sites, and I think it will take time, but hopefully with all of this, you know, censoring and banning of videos, it will happen. I know I just saw one, and I don't know anything about it, so I don't know if it's a good or bad site, but it's called banned.video. And so I know there was those two doctors from California that were banned from, their video was taken down from YouTube, are up on there on banned.video. So I'm hoping that there are more like that that start to grow and that people will use. Yeah, I agree with you that YouTube has cornered the market with the name and being the only one for so long. But hopefully other people, I wouldn't, you know, have a clue how to do another site, but hopefully there are people out there who can do that and keep it going. I know there's another one, what, Vimeo, but I don't know much about that one either. So do you know that one at all?
I've seen it. I remember it years ago because I made a little documentary that was like 2 hours long back in the day, and the only place I could get it up, this is before YouTube allowed you to have two-hour videos. Back then, they only allowed you 15-minute increments. And I got it up there, but that was a long time ago. I didn't even know it was still around. But you got to find some kind of platform. The problem is, like, let's say I wanted to create some kind of platform for 9/11 Truth activists, call it like 9/11 Truth Tube or something. First of all, I don't have the knowledge base to do that in terms of programming and setting up something like that. But somebody who does that would have to spend all of their time policing it, because you know people would have explicit content uploaded within moments. When I say explicit content, I'm talking about sexual stuff, and I don't want to say the word on the air, but you know what I'm talking about. That would happen. You'd have to police that out of there. You'd have to police out anything that was illegal or inappropriate. So, I mean, it requires a full staff and a real business, and have that be the only thing that you do. So there has to not only be the person with those resources and knowledge and time to do that, but they also have to be woken up to 9/11 truth and other truths as well, and have the interest in leading the way on this.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, and as I said, I wouldn't know how to do it, but I think if there are people who have the talent and maybe can get together as a group and do that and take some kind of advertising or something to fund it, or donations, that would be really great. I think our, you know, the TV station RT is having problems with being censored all the time. So they've created something, or I think they've created it, called Portable TV, where you can put, there's a lot of videos, and I guess there's no censorship on it, but I don't know much about that either, so I'll have to look into that. But so there are people starting this because they're seeing we have to, that we just have to, because otherwise we'll never know the truth about anything.
Right. Well, somebody contacted me about participating in a conference on how to deal with the coming censorship. I never heard anything back from them about it. But it does show that there's people out there at least thinking about this. So if you are a leader and you got this knowledge out there and you're willing to do it, man, then save us all and get something like that going. I would love to see it. I'd bring you here on the show to talk about it. Now, for me, what this has emphasized is the need for real-world activism, for us to not lose touch with that. It can't just be posting on Facebook. It can't be just uploading and sharing YouTube videos. All of that stuff is important too. But you got to go out and talk to people and do all of the things that people were doing for decades before the internet was invented for their various issues that have come up over the years. So we can't lose touch with that. I'm interested in your thoughts on that and the importance of real-world activism and maintaining it along with the internet work that people do.
Yeah, I think you really do. Meeting a person who looks kind of normal and, you know, doesn't wear a tinfoil hat that's telling you about 9/11 is a lot better than just, you know, going online and reading about it and not knowing who's putting that out there. And yeah, you do. You have to get out there and do it. And you know, I've done a table in Maine with the Maine 9/11 Truth people at their annual organic farmers fair, and they get like 60,000 people that attend over the weekend. And we have a table there, and we pass out a lot of architects and engineers, a lot of AE brochures. And last year we won the prize for the best political table in the whole fair out of 55 tables. So then we got the most educational table prize. So things are changing, and we had a lot of support being there. So I would encourage people to think about doing that. You know, set up a table at these different events. You know, go to the park and set up a table with literature, or just walk around. And again, I think architects and engineers, I'm so happy that you guys are there and exist, because you've created a lot of documents and you know, flyers and postcards and things you can just hand people easily that look very professional. And then you can start a conversation with people. But, yeah, I think the one-on-one contact is really important. And I think people also need to read more books. I don't think people read enough books on the details of what's going on. And I think you get a better background and more detail if you start to read books. So just want to push that.
Oh, exactly. No, we've lost touch with a lot of things that just came naturally to us. I was just having a conversation with a friend about this, how things have changed so much during our adult lives. When I went to college, if you wanted to talk to somebody, I mean, you could call them on the phone, but most times you'd go knock on their dorm door and go in and talk to them. And that was pretty much the case in regular society, too. You either called them on the phone and actually had a conversation, but now it's texting and emails. It's so impersonal, and it's easy to misconceive a feeling or what someone's trying to convey just in a message written out. So it's really important to have that human contact and reestablish that. And unfortunately, we are now out of time, but I want to end it on a quick quote here. And I saw this on Facebook. This is from Francis O'Neill, who puts out a lot of great quotes. And he said, "If the media talked about 9/11 truth, so would you." That's why it's important to continue our outreach, because I have no doubt about it. If this was on the TV and in the newspapers, suddenly 3/4 of the country would be 9/11 truth activists, because it would be socially acceptable. So that's why we have to keep on pushing for it.
Yeah, and the consequences of 9/11 are huge on our society, and I don't know if it's changed our world dramatically. And so, yeah, knowing the truth is really important if we want to get back our civil liberties and our country, really.
All right. This is Cheryl Curtis. Her show is 9/11 Wake Up Call. We'll provide a link to it under the show description or in it here on 911freefall.com. Cheryl, thank you for all the great work you've done over the years, and thank you for coming on the show today.
Oh, Andy, thanks so much for having me.
This program is on every Thursday night on No Lies Radio at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific, and every other Sunday night on BBS Radio at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. You can also keep track of the archives by going to 911freefall.com. This is Andy Steele. So have a great week. Good luck.